Okay, hello, hello. We want to do a couple of minute warning, try to get to your seats. Please, if you haven't yet, take a look at the booths around the corner. They're very interesting. If you haven't done it, you'll have a couple of minutes to do it right now. The folks who have been asking and haven't found them, the restrooms are that way. Go past the door that you came in on, and just past them, you'll see the rooms on your left. Shut these off. Forgot them. Shut them off. Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. I am very glad to be here, and I am even happier to see all of you here today. My name is Dick Monks. I'm going to be your MC for the program tonight. We have a mixed program of a show about the Lawrence strike, as well as some awards. The awards are especially dear to my heart, a special part of the program. My daughter Kayla graduated from the Workman's Circle Shula back in 2003. She participated in all the early sweatshop protests. And my wife, Enid Eckstein, was one of the Shula parents who came up with the idea about the protests and helped get it started and organized the beginning of the whole program. The other award, I'm a union guy. I've been a union organizer in Boston for about 40 years. And still standing. And later in the program, we'll be honoring a great friend, but also a true leader among leaders, union organizer here in Boston, but also Washington, D.C. That's Gene Bruskin. We'll be doing that later. Before we go any further, a couple of announcements. I want to acknowledge some folks who are here today. We're very pleased that they came because they represent a lot of people. First, we want to acknowledge Joanne Goldstein, the Secretary of Labor in Deval Patrick's administration, and more importantly, a great friend of labor. We also want to acknowledge Rich Rogers, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Greater Boston Labor Council. In addition, not leading out the North Shore, Jeff Crosby, Secretary Treasurer of the North Shore Labor Council. Jeff's here somewhere. Brian Lang, President of HERE Local 26. Unite here, Local 26. And we have to give a special shout out to Local 26 for their recent victory of food service workers at Northeastern University. Yeah. Going back up to the North Shore, I'd like to acknowledge Alex Brown, President of IUE, CWA, Local 201. Jeremy Burton, Executive Director, Jewish Relations Council. And we have to especially be thankful to the Boston Teachers Unions, their President Richard Stubman. These are the folks who teach our kids. This is their hall. They gave it to us for free. So we thank them very much. Thank a teacher the next time you see one. '12 was an amazing year. We've already been celebrating many centennials. Girl Scouts of America, the sinking of the Titanic in the North Atlantic, the opening of Fenway Park, where our baseball team, the Boston Red Sox, the Red Sox, play their ball. And we should remember this, fans. They won the World Series in 1912. So hold on to that. But the Lawrence strike of 1912 is not as well known. But we believe the lessons are more important to us than all those other events. Think about it. 25,000 people separated by all the fears and prejudices of the time. Race, nationality, language, age, gender, etc., etc. They got through that They came together. They stood up. They walked off the job. They did a brave and bold action, and they won. That's something all of us can leave here today remembering. It can be done. So why is the Workers' Circle doing this program? This was not a Jewish strike. Yes, there were Jewish workers in those sweatshops, but there were folks from all over the world working in Lawrence during that during those days. Well, the Workers' Circle was founded in 1900 by Jewish immigrants, mostly working in the sweatshops. And right away, they became an ally and helped grow the labor movement of the early 20th century. In fact, the medical aid the Workers' Circle gave to its members and to strikers throughout New England made them become known as the Red Cross of Labor. Today's program was written and produced by Bessa Belt, A Better World, the Workers' Circle Community Chorus. They'll be singing some of their songs in Yiddish. Yiddish was the language of the Eastern European Jewish community, and it was also the language of the early Jewish labor movement. So get ready. Here we go. The strike of 1912.
They came from 51 different nations, lived in tenements in the most densely populated neighborhood in the country, and were lucky if they could afford the molasses to go with their morning bread. 28,000 men, women, and children worked in 30 mills in the city of Lawrence, some so large they stretched for 44 blocks. By 1912, power looms that had run at 90 picks per minute in 1890 were racing at 140 picks per minute. Lawrence spindles produced more cloth per employee than any other textile town in the U.S. When a new law went into effect, cutting the work week from 56 to 54 hours, the mill owners sped up the lines and production didn't miss a beat. But wages, they were cut. As workers opened their paychecks, years of pent-up anger broke out, and with a cry of, "Short pay, all out," the strike was by a pay cut of 32 cents a week, 3 loaves of bread.
Brothers and sisters, all gather round. Together we are strong enough to shut these mills down. Brothers and sisters, all gather round.
Big-shouldered buildings and pierced by smokestacks. Another whistle followed, and another. Each was sharper than usual because that morning was brutally cold, even for Massachusetts in January. And from the mills, the Pacific, the Air, the Everett and the Atlantic, the Washington and the Arlington, the small Kunhardt and the awesome wood mill, the whistle screeched. While streetcars rumbled through downtown, tepid bulbs and oil lamps lit up row after row of tenements. Bleary-eyed people shivering, stamping their feet, muttering their own peculiar curses, shuffled into dingy kitchens. Water taps were turned on but emitted only the dull thud of frozen pipes. Babies cried because they were hungry, and parents knew exactly how they felt. Finding what privacy they could, women squeezed into starched, white shirtwaists, while men elbowed for room at mirrors and shaved with straight razors. Then, with the city still dark as midnight, the workers of Lawrence headed for the mills.
Thank you.
were foreign-born or children of immigrants. Half had been in America for less than 5 years. In the newly coined metaphor of the time, this melting pot contained the seizings of dozens of different nations. There were Poles from Galicia, Italians from Sicily, Syrians from the Ottoman Empire. There were Jews from Riga, Odessa, and other exotic ports of call. Beside them marched Scots, Armenians, Portuguese, Belgians, Germans, English, French, Canadians, Russians, Greeks, Irish, and many more nationalities. They ranged from tall 12-year-olds whose forged work papers claimed they were 14 to men and women approaching 50. Some were slightly older, but not many lasted that long in the mills. Inhaling fibers that floated through dank, humid mill rooms, a third died within a decade on the job. Malnourished, they succumbed to tuberculosis, pneumonia. They were crushed by machinery, mangled by looms and spinners. Those who avoided accident or disease just wore out like an old suit. Yet on this icy morning in January, defying the odds, 28,000 were marching to work.
Escortion fabricas or building machines.
Wild is the roar of machines in the sweatshop. I often forget I'm alive in that din. I'm drowned in the tide of the terrible tumult. My ego is slain. I become a machine.
Es räuscht in Fabrik, als ich bild die Maschinen. Als oftmal vergesse ich den Räusch, als ich bin. Ich werde in dem schrecklichen Tunnel verloren. Mein Ich wird dort bottle. Ich werde a Maschine.
I work and I work without rhyme, without reason. Produce and produce and produce for what end? For what and for whom? I don't know. I don't wonder since when can a whirling machine comprehend.
Ich arbeit und arbeit und arbeit und rech bin. Es tut sich und tut sich und tut sich an so. Für was und für wem? Ich weiß nicht, ich kenn nicht. Wie kommt der Maschine dort zu denken am all?
The workers flowed together in a torrent of heads, caps, and faces, sweeping past the ornate storefronts of downtown. With the start whistle just minutes away, they picked up pace, powered, it seemed, by rumors. The night before, the rumors had swept through alleys, up stairwells, into cramped tenements. The rumors were ominous, inspiring, amazing. 200 Polish women had stopped work at the Everett Mill on Thursday afternoon. Not enough pay, they said. When they refused to work and were ordered out, they began shouting, urging others to join them. 1,000 looms were shut down. All night the rumors had flown through the tenements. Now they came into the dawning light, and a single word circulated in dozens of tongues. In Italian.
Yeah.
The strike began like a spark of electricity, one overseer recalled. Racing into the Washington mill, men and boys shouted, short pay, all out, all out. Hundreds bolted past startled workers. Within minutes, more had left their machines. They stormed through the mill, shouting, whooping, calling to others, pulling knives. A few slashed the belts that rose like giant rubber bands, connecting machines to overhead camshafts. Machines coasted to a stop. Outside, strikers from other mills began gathering at the gates. Just after 10 a.m., police responded to the riot call. By 2 p.m., nearly 11,000 were on strike or locked out as the morning's frenzy spread through the city. That night, an organizer from the Radical Union, Industrial Workers of the World, took the midnight train from New York to Lawrence. In the days that followed, the IWW demonstrated what a difference it would make as the leader of this volatile strike. While the rattled mayor predicted further rebellion would lead to an awful slaughter, IWW organizers, first Joseph Ettore and Arturo Giovannitti, and later Big Bill Haywood and Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, urged strikers to be peaceful yet unrelenting. The early violence and venting of rage gave way to a steely determination.
Be proud of your labor. It gives you the right to savor the fruits of the earth.
Encircled the city and protected the mills. Strikers were soaked with fire hoses in the frigid winter air, clubbed and beaten. One young worker was bayoneted to death. But by the end of the week, more than 20,000 were off the job.
Mothers, kinder,
mothers, 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 kinder, children.
Barricades. And he won't be coming, so for now he's going to stay. Kids will know that Daddy will not be home tonight. Sisters have the hand in God's kids and girls for Newman. Daddy's with his rifle there, he's in the street to fight. Sissy's on a white of wrapping gas for boyfriend Apple. Mother's also in the street with apples she can sell. Jenny's gift for Joseph, very teller in the temple. Working in the kitchen, make the place the park as well. Sisters are in the kitchen, there's a kind of a yachting. Hold your breath with soft voices, honor to the last. Bobby Mama is a bear, too, helping them talking. With mom's not coming home, yet she's out there helping dad. Who's not the Buddha is a lying famous hero. Some bag of bullets has come to pay a call. A ride of floating Hanalei and mocking on the needle. It quizzes right past Hanalei and pops into the wall.
First parade caught everyone by surprise. The parade grew like gossip. Rallying behind a large American flag, a few dozen set out, cheering and shouting to everyone they passed. Men, women, and children came out, waving, applauding. Many more joined, some carrying their own stars and stripes, as the procession swept through the neighborhoods. By the time it flowed into downtown, the parade numbered 10,000. And through the cacophony, some heard a band strike up the worldwide hymn of workers' revolution, the Internationale. Thousands joined in, as they would again and again in the weeks that followed, each in his or her native language.
Bye. Arise, ye prisoners of starvation. Arise, ye wretched of the earth. Thunders condemnation. A better world is in birth. No more traditions change shall bind us. Arise, ye slaves, no more enthralled. The earth shall rise on new foundations.
transfer of wealth.
The greatest transfer of wealth.
To the top 1%.
To the top 1%.
In the history of modern society.
In the history of modern society.
In 2012.
In 2012.
The top 1%.
The top 1%.
Owns more wealth.
Owns more wealth.
Than the bottom 90.
Than the bottom 90.
The rent. Dinnegeld, the rent. My God, we have to pay the rent.
Faltering and a gnawing famine as near as each empty kitchen cupboard, women strode into the front lines of the strike. Throughout the tenements, women met in doorways or on street corners to discuss strategy. They pooled their meager resources, cooking together, caring for each other's children. On sidewalks, they linked arms and swept up the street, singing and calling out to passers-by. Women threw pepper in the faces of police and militia, cut their suspenders with scissors, or sent them flying off horses jabbed with hatpins. One policeman can handle 10 men, lamented Lawrence's district attorney, while it takes 10 policemen to handle one.
Ciao, ciao, ciao,
in quest of your rescue, you are
Lawrence that laid on a Saturday in mid-February, mothers and their children quietly gathered to give this bitter and vindictive strike a human heart. There was much to do in preparing 150 children to be sent into the care of strangers. Each child had to be registered and pinned with a paper listing name, age, address, and nationality. Parents had to be reassured that their children would be safe, that host families had been carefully screened, that this was all for the best. And above all, if the strike was to be won, tears had to be stifled. The station platform bustled with farewells and embraces. Inside the car, the children rushed for window seats and pressed their faces against the glass. Then, as the train began to pull out, the platform billowed with waving handkerchiefs, and the sadness gave way to a great shout. The children of Lawrence were off to New York City, Philadelphia, and Barry, Vermont. Out of harm's way and into the care of supportive families. Police were determined to stop the next children's exodus 2 weeks later. The trouble began when police formed a gauntlet between the waiting room and the arriving train. Mothers marched their children toward the train, and to the horror of onlookers, police grabbed the women, tearing them from their boys and girls. Children screamed as their mothers were dragged away.
I saw them grab little children and throw them into patrol wagons.
The women fought back, fists flying, fingernails scratching.
One policeman took his billy club and struck a woman, a pregnant woman, right on her belly.
Battered and hysterical, the women were arrested while the children were rounded up. The next day, newspapers across the country reported accounts of the clubbing of women in a Massachusetts mill town. A stunned President Taft ordered his attorney general to investigate. Children were sent to Washington, D.C. for a congressional hearing. After 7 brutal weeks, this assault would prove to be the turning point in the strike that had stirred America's conscience.
continues. We learn our history so that we can go forward today. We now want to honor our awardees. Gene Bruskin is a working class Jewish kid from South Philly in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania. Who knew? Gene didn't really have the resources to go away to a fancy college. But he was smart, he was determined, and he had a beautiful jump shot. With that, Gene was off to Princeton to play basketball with Bill Bradley. But it was the 60s and the 70s, and the political movements and the turmoil of the protest movements lured Gene out of the gym and into the streets, and he's been there ever since. Upon graduation, Gene moved to New York City, where he became involved in the anti-racism and the anti-war movements while teaching in the New York City public school system. By the early mid-70s, he made his way up to Boston. He became involved with others and organized the union for the Boston School Bus Drivers, United Steelworkers, Local number 8751. He became their first president. Throughout that time, there was a rising progressive movement of new labor activists around the city, and Gene was very instrumental in bringing these groups of people together, looking to build a more militant and action-oriented labor movement. Gene helped start some organizations that went through different names and configurations, but eventually ended up being what we now know as Jobs with Justice. Gene moved on to Washington, D.C., where he started working for different unions, always carrying his message of progressive economic and social justice. Equality for all was his carol call. In the early 90s, for a couple of years, he went and became Jesse Jackson's chief counsel of labor. He came back into the labor movement after a few years of that, and eventually got hired by the UFCW to help them with their Smithfield strike down in Tar Heel, North Carolina. Gene got hired and he organized the Justice at Smithfield campaign. And he turned this unsuccessful union campaign that had been going on for 15 years into a national call for justice and action around the country. In 2005, I believe, the Workmen's Circle Children's Protest chose Smithfield as its target and did actions here in Boston. In 2008, the 5,000 hog slaughtering package workers in this plant in Tar Heel, North Carolina, formed, voted in their union, and became proud members of UFCW. Please welcome Gene Ruskin.
There was a plan where they said you can't. So don't rave and rant, no matter how you feel. It's no big deal because we're Smithfield and we own Tar Heel. Pigs are our deal from the squeal to the meal. In 92, the plant was complete, 1 million square feet, the biggest on earth, with a daily drill of a 32,000 hog kill, lines racing, workers facing, ungodly pacing, one motion every few seconds, designed for body wrecking, cause with no tail and no snout, you really don't count. Workers trampled by 300-pound hogs, fingers caught in machine cogs, wrists destroyed so they can't lift baby boys, flirting daily with disaster to meet the harsh terms of an unforgiving master. So the workers organize, wanting to unionize to save their lives. People rally nationwide, demanding justice by the workers' side. They marched, picketed at supermarkets, refused to yield, and demanding justice at Smithfield. With Obama's North Carolina election win, the workers proclaimed, if we can change the White House, we can change the hog house. If we can change the White House, we can change the hog house. Workers leafleted daily at 4 a.m. calling for change. We can believe it. Go for hope, not fear. Union time is here. Si, se, puede. When the word came with the final score of the election game, workers win. Smithfield changed. Workers cried and danced in the cafeteria. There was near hysteria. Organizers shouted, company counting. For 16 years, the company had lied and tried to claim that they spoke in the workers' name and that workers wanted things to stay the same. But hope springs eternal in the human soul. The workers reached their hard-fought goal. And as the next day's dawn was there, down in Tar Heel, you could hear the workers' chant became a cheer. We changed the hog house. We changed the hog house. We changed the hog house. Smithfield campaign.
I didn't say that Gene is a poet. That's his poem that he wrote in honor of that victory. That day. People also don't know, maybe, that he's a songwriter, he's a playwright, he's an actor, he's a singer, he's a person of great integrity, honesty, humility, and he still has that sweet jump shot. Gene Ruskin. I give this award today from the Workman's Circle.
Spirit of this magnificent event in this truly special show of Workman's Circle. And your dynamic leader, Lisa Gallatin. And I think what has happened here is that you have helped revive this really all-important culture in Jewish working class history. Just the incredible role that it has played, just that culture played in the civil rights movement, in the anti-apartheid movement, in the women's movement. We need this culture for our movement to flourish today. We need all kinds of culture. And all of this really makes me have to sort of ask myself, what is my Jewish background and roots have to do with the fact that I did this work and have done this work for workers in my whole life. So I grew up, as Dick said, in South Philly, and my father was a TV repairman, and my mother had the hard task of trying to raise us. And my father abandoned his Orthodox Jewish upbringing to join the Communist Youth Movement in the 30s. And that's where he actually met my mom at a dance. But in my house, we didn't go to temple. We ignored Shabbat. We didn't do any religious holidays whatsoever. But my father was always singing Fiddler on the Roof, if I were a rich man. And my grandparents had been hat makers in Russia, in the steppe. And my great-grandparents, rather, and they were thrown down a well, throwing up a drum. My grandfather hid and eventually fled with my grandmother to this country, and they landed in Philadelphia. They opened up a hardware store on the corner of 5th and Porter, and it's still there, Bruskin's Hardware.
Wow.
100 years later, so watch out, Home Depot, we're after you. So being Jewish was really been deeply embedded in my DNA. As far as I knew, we really hadn't been anything else for centuries. And of course, Yiddish was everywhere in my house. You know, there was Fablanche, there was Fachakta, there was Oy Vey is Mir. Anytime somebody wanted to be expressive, well, that there was Yiddish. No one said it, but we were really very comfortable in our own skin. We were steeped in our own tradition, and that meant identifying with the oppressed, regardless, really, of who they were. It's almost as if we had known, which we didn't, that in Deuteronomy it says, you shall not abuse a needy and destitute laborer, whether a fellow countryman or a stranger. As far as Jews and labor, wasn't it Moses that led the first general strike? And later I found out that the historic roles of Jews in the Russian labor movement and the Russian socialist movement, of Leon Trotsky, of Rosa Luxemburg, of the prominent role of Jewish workers early in the years in the U.S. labor movement, in the Lawrence strike, the important role of working in circles in giving Jewish workers a home, a place to be in a difficult time where they could get support, they could cherish and nourish their own culture. And I learned of the many Jewish leaders that played such an important role in our history, of Samuel Gompers, of Emma Goldman, and Clara Lumley, and so many others over the years, and then the many Jewish activists and progressive labor leaders and others in this room. So really, for me, I could not be prouder of my own progressive Jewish identity, of our tradition of fighting against oppression, not only our own, but of others. And in this worldwide struggle for justice that is being waged every day, somewhere, in some place, in many places on this earth, we can and we must embrace and define and continue to define our living Jewish tradition. So I cherish and applaud the work of the Working Circle. This award and this honor touches me deeply in my heart and in my soul. Thank you. So I have now really a great pleasure, and that is to introduce the next generation of union and social justice organizers, the children of the Boston's Workman's Circle Sunday School, the Shua. I want all the Shua students, the graduate students, all of those current students who have been active and who have led the sweatshop protests over the years, everybody, come on up, all of you, everybody, come on up, let's go, everybody. The Workman's Circle Sunday School teaches Jewish culture and history. And it's a very important part of the curriculum. It's labor history. It's Jewish activism. It's the leadership of many progressive social justice movements and the role that Jews have played. And every year for 14 years, the Shula fifth grade class has organized a children's protest against sweatshops. It's amazing. The kids take the lead and they make a difference. In 2006, the Shula came out in support of the National Smithfield Campaign. And you can see them right up there. They organized a protest at the local supermarket. They demanded to take the Smithfield meat off the shelf until the workers were treated fairly. And Boston played a major role in winning that campaign. And the Workman's Circle Children's Protest was an important part of what happened in Boston. And as a result, 5,000 workers in Smithfield's plant in North Carolina have union, justice, and dignity on the job. Thank you. When it first started in 1999, the children's protest against sweatshops focused on popular retailers, Nike, Guess, places where the produce, where the clothing rather, is produced in sweatshops in poor developing countries. In 2001, the fifth graders joined forces with Unite, the textile workers union, and passed an anti-sweatshop law in the city of Boston. And they were back again, out in the snow, protesting the sweatshops used by Walmart that have been made the Walmart family one of the richest in the world. They came out in the bitter cold and in the snow. They marched in support of the janitors at commercial cleaning companies in Boston. They marched in support of a Hyatt 100 when the entire housekeeping staff at the Boston Hotel was fired once and the job was contracted out. And these young people were there to stand with them. And just this year, victory again. They picketed at Trader Joe's to demand one penny more for the Immokalee tomato workers. And Trader Joe's paid in. They did. So I just want to say to all of you that I cannot express enough how important it is, how inspiring it is, how hopeful it is to us in our generation that you are all standing up for what you believe in and that it's making a difference. And we thank you from the bottom of our heart.
Watch all this change happen before us, both in fifth grade, when I was in fifth grade for our Smith Club protest, and for the past 3 years working with TASC. So now we would like to invite all of the kids in the audience to join us in a picket line around the room.
Somebody who really played a pivotal role in getting the whole Students Against Sweatshop effort organized, because as you can imagine, it doesn't sort of just happen where a whole bunch of young people show up at some picket line. There's a lot of work. And she was a parent at the time and a volunteer. and she's been a lifelong union activist, organizer, an example, an inspiration to many, many people, a close friend of my own. And please give a round of applause to Enid Eshelman.
You get the kids going to work.
Children, let me tell you a story. A new day will come when all of humankind will be brothers and sisters.
Strikers' demands, and a crowd of 15,000 workers gathered on Lawrence Common voted to accept the offer. Across New England, most other mills followed suit. 300,000 workers got raises. 12 million more in wages were paid the next year alone. But IWW leaders Joseph Ettore and Arturo Giovannitti were still in jail. They had been framed for murder during the strike and held in jail until their acquittal the following November. With no facts to even place them at the scene of the crime, the trial turned on the question of which strike Ettore and Giovannitti had led. Had it been the strike portrayed by the prosecution? Anarchic, incendiary, carefully crafted as the spark of a workers' revolution? Or had it been peaceful, even an inspiring strike, its only violence triggered by militia, cops, and provocateurs? Ettore rose to address the jury. "For my part, I have not been tried on my acts," he stated. "I have been tried here because of my social ideals, because I hold the view that all wealth is the product of labor and therefore should belong to labor." Then Giovannitti took the floor. "The jury had seen only one side of this great industrial question," he said. "But what about the ethical part? What about the better and nobler humanity where no man will ever be obliged to go on strike to obtain 50 cents a week more, where no children will have to starve?
Wait. What about immigrants' rights right now? We still have immigrants who have been oppressed. You see such laws like the SB 2061.
Tell them. Tell you something.
My name is Chesenia, and I work for the Chelsea Collaborative. It's a nonprofit in the city of Chelsea. I did not rehearsal for this part. But I'm here today, and I'm like all of this great energy. I want this energy to be transformed in the streets on March 1st. I mean, May 1st, which is Tuesday, International Workers' Day. Woo! Are you gonna march with us on May 1st?
Yes.
Yeah. Are we gonna chat out loud in the street for immigrant rights?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so I have in front of here in the table flyers with information. We are going to be gathering and starting at Lopresti Park in East Boston at 2:30 p.m. From there, we're going to start marching all the way down to the city of Chelsea. In the city of Chelsea, I'm going to be waiting for you. So the march is going to depart at 3:30 together with the East Boston as a whole group, and it will commemorate International Workers' Day in the city of Everett. So I see you there. Workers united will never be defeated. The workers united will never be defeated. Trabajadores unidos jamás serán vencidos. Trabajadores unidos jamás serán vencidos. Thank you.
Thank you. the percussionist, Grant Smith, acting the shootout, Morgan Medeiros. To our narrator and artistic consultant, Holly Newman. To the band. To our stage manager, Eric Gladstone. To our audience leaders, please stand up. Everyone standing up. We're all standing up. To our ACL interpreter, Kim Shaw. Director and creator of the program, Lisa Gallagher.